and the relatively new president and CEO, Rahsaan Hall, joined the organization about 9 months ago and is here with us today to talk to us about himself and about the organization and about how you may be able to use it here in Quincy. So, Mr. Hall, great to meet you, first of all.
Thank you. Glad to be here,
John. Yeah, it's a pleasure, really. Thank you for reaching out and thinking of us here in Quincy to get the message of the ULEM out to the public, right?
Yes, sir.
That's the abbreviation for it.
It is.
So it's, you know, 105 years old, so it's it's only been around just a couple of years,
just,
right?
Just a little while.
Yeah, yeah. Before we talk about that, I want to learn a little bit about yourself and tell us how you came to the position that you're at right now.
Sure. Before I began as the president and CEO of the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts, I was the director of the racial justice program for the ACLU, or the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts. I had been in that role for about 6 years. I'm an attorney by training. I started out my legal career as an assistant district attorney in the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office, handling any number of gun, drug, and homicide cases, served as a prosecutor for about 8 years. I left the DA's office and then went to the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, which is now called Lawyers for Civil Rights, handled employment discrimination, housing discrimination, police misconduct. That organization focuses on race and national origin discrimination. And so I handled litigation matters, but also got involved in policy advocacy and community engagement while I was there. And that's what led to the role at the ACLU of Massachusetts. In between ACLU of Massachusetts and this post at the Urban League, I ran for office. I was a candidate for Plymouth County District Attorney. I ran as a Democrat and was the Democratic nominee. Secured the endorsements of Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley and Senator Ed Markey and Elizabeth Warren, as well as other local officials. Did not win, but I think that created an amazing opportunity for me to come to the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts. I'm also an ordained reverend in the African Methodist Episcopal Church. My home church is St. Paul AME Church in Cambridge. And I'm a proud resident of the city of champions, Brockton, Massachusetts.
Wow. So a Massachusetts native?
Not native to Massachusetts. I'm born and raised in Denver, Colorado, but I've lived in Massachusetts for almost 30 years, so it's home now.
Okay, sure. So what drew you to the position at the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts?
Given the nature of the work, this is one of the longest civil rights organizations in the nation. It started nationally in 1910. Our affiliate in Boston started in 1919. And the nature of the work, looking at economic development and economic self-sustainability in communities of color, is something that speaks to me.
Okay. That it transcends communities of color, though, right? I mean, it's all.
Yeah,
it's all
our services are available to anyone who comes seeking them.
Right.
It's at its inception, though, the Urban League was created at the turn of the century when black people were fleeing racial violence in the South. They came to northern cities to find help.
I was going to ask you, what was going on at the time, you know, 1910 to 1919? It was right after World War I, basically, right?
Exactly. And because of racial violence and discrimination and lack of opportunities, black people moved to northern cities, but when they arrived in the northern cities, they were met with the same level of discrimination. But there were also people who came up who were unskilled. And so the Urban League came together to start making sure that people were trained for the employment opportunities that existed, but also to advocate to make sure that people were hired. They also engaged in advocacy around the squalid conditions that people were forced to live in through discrimination and redlining, and advocated for housing and got involved in other civil rights matters. In the 50s, it was Whitney M. Young, the national president, along with Dr. King and Roy Wilkins, who and A. Philip Randolph, who led the March on Washington. And so we have continued to do that advocacy over the generations.
Okay, so part of your goal, relatively about 9 months, you told me that you were in the current role, is to expand your outreach, right?
Yes, we are the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Yeah.
However, our headquarters are in Roxbury, in the heart of Nubian Square, and but our programming is available to everyone, but it's just primarily been in Boston. But so I've been looking at expanding our geographic reach, the programming and services that we provide, making sure that the rest of the residents of the Commonwealth in Eastern Massachusetts can access them.
Okay, it's a tall task, I'm sure.
Oh, no, it certainly is.
Are there other urban leagues like Northern Massachusetts or Western Massachusetts?
So there is an urban league in Springfield.
Okay.
And, you know, of course, nationally, there are 92 affiliates across the country covering 36 states.
Okay.
And a lot of them have two, sometimes three or four. But in Massachusetts, it's just us, the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts and the Urban League of Springfield.
Okay. So what would you like people here in Quincy to know about the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts?
Sure. I think it's important for people to know that our programming cuts across five pillars. That's employment, workforce development and entrepreneurship, education, health, housing, and justice. And so we do both programmatic work, we do advocacy, and we do public education across all five pillars. I think the mainstay of our work has been the workforce development. We currently have a coding boot camp that is a 20-week program that provides a stipend for individuals to learn how to code. They're teaching JavaScript and HTML. It's a full-stack program, so it's front-end and back-end, and it helps people who have just a high school degree, a diploma, or equivalent find entry-level employment opportunities in the tech sector.
Okay.
Some of our students have gone on to create apps that live on the App Store. And we also have an entrepreneurship accelerator that has been shown to improve business revenues by 36% on average.
Okay. What would you say is your greatest challenge right now at ULEM? What is it that you see as the number one mission or goal?
I think economic self-sustainability is core to our mission, and making sure that we are reaching the people who are in the greatest need and plugging them into the programming that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And again, thinking about this geographic expansion, making sure that people in some of the gateway cities outside of Boston and other communities are aware of the programming that we provide, whether it's workforce development, entrepreneurship, or youth STEM programming.
Yeah, why do you think it hasn't happened until now, Mr. Hall? It's been 105 years.
Yeah, well, I think in part, I think the greatest concentration of black people and people of color has primarily been in Boston, but over the years, as people have migrated, and not to say that people of color haven't existed in other places within the state, they have.
Yeah.
But because the concentration has been in Boston and because the organization was located there, I think that was the focus of our efforts. And so I'm thinking about making sure that our services are in the places where the people are.
Okay, yeah. They primarily take place right now in your center in Boston?
Yes, they do. And so part of what we want to do is make sure that people know about it so that they can come to Boston, but also for our Entrepreneurship Accelerator program. We've had a cohort up in Lynn, we've had one in Brockton, we've had one in Boston, we've had one out in Holyoke. So we're making those programs available and accessible in other communities. So we'll continue to do that.
Okay.
But we're also looking at having a physical presence in different communities too, whether it's a teen drop-in center, or it's a workforce development career center, or it's the construction of affordable housing. Over the next several years, these are the initiatives that we're looking to do in concert with the organizations and the elected officials who are in the community. We're not going to parachute in and act like we have all of the answers. We want to work alongside the folks who have been doing the work, but try to fill in any of the gaps that may exist.
Yeah, have you worked with any of the other social services agencies here in Quincy, QCAP, Interfaith?
We haven't yet,
so
we're looking to make connections with the
all
organizations who have been here and been serving the community well.
Okay, sure. Physical presence, so that sounds like you want to put up a building somewhere.
Eventually,
okay.
If it makes sense. I think there is a significant need for affordable housing.
Yes.
And that's something that we're looking to do. I know that there are a lot of community development corporations that are doing that as well, but I think that there is a great enough need and resources out there that one more organization coming along to do that work in an inclusive and equitable way isn't going to hurt anybody.
I think the interesting part about all the services that you provide is they're at no cost to your clients, right?
Correct.
Yeah,
we don't charge
do
for the programming. Well, it comes from the funding and fundraising that we're able to do. We get a state appropriation for some of the workforce development. However, unfortunately, because of the lack of revenue and tax revenue this year, we saw a cut to our programming funding. But, you know, we'll continue to do the development work to make sure we're bringing in the dollars to continue to provide those services to the community.
Yeah, you are a registered 501c3 corporation.
Yes, we are.
Nonprofit. Do you do actual annual fundraising events?
We do. We have a couple of annual fundraising events. We have an annual breakfast that's held at Fenway Park. This year we will change it, the nature of the breakfast, to the Women's Empowerment Breakfast. We want to highlight and especially apropos here in Women's History Month, that we acknowledge that the great work that women have done in the corporate sector, the nonprofit sector, and those who are rising stars. That will be in May 21st to be exact. For the first time, we're going to have a golf tournament. So we're looking at finalizing the details of that. And we'll also be having our 105th anniversary gala sometime in early November. We have a health fair that we'll be launching in sometime in June, and it's really about raising awareness about healthcare resources and the need for Medicaid redetermination. Many people got pushed off the rolls, and so we want to make sure that we're providing resources to people to get re-enrolled in Medicare and Medicaid so that they can have the appropriate healthcare coverage.
Yes. You have a voluminous staff that are specializing in the different areas that you specialize.
We have a staff of nine, so we're pretty lean,
but we
try to get it done the best we can.
Do you need more help?
We certainly need help. Our volunteer efforts are organized through two auxiliary groups of the organization, the Guild. And that is anyone who is an adult who can volunteer to help raise awareness about Urban League programming and do some fundraising and volunteer service events. But also we have a young professional network, which is individuals 21 to 40 who are looking to volunteer and be engaged in self-enrichment, financial literacy programming, volunteer services as well.
Is the ULEM working at all with the migrants, Mr. Hall, in the current migrant crisis?
We haven't had an opportunity to yet. We certainly make ourselves available to the extent that people can get work authorization and can come to our program. There are some language capacity issues that we still have to figure out, but we have a mindset of being welcoming and making sure that the people who are here, for any number of reasons, but also recognizing that many people have fled intolerable conditions and are looking for refuge here, that we make ourselves available to them and support them within community.
There is also a National Urban League that you are affiliate of, right?
Yes. The National Urban League was founded in 1910, and across the country there are 92 affiliates of the National Urban League.
Well, undertaking now what's called a D3 campaign, which is what?
Yes. Yeah. The D3 campaign means defend democracy, demand diversity, and defeat poverty. And if you think about the five pillar areas of the organization, employment, education, health, housing, and justice, those three components of the campaign, defend democracy, demand diversity, and defeat poverty, cut across each of those pillars. And the campaign was launched this year as a way of pushing back against some of the assaults on our democracy, the challenges to diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives in the private sector as well as the public sector. And a consistent mission of the Urban League has been economic self-development and bringing about economic self-sufficiency in communities of color and poor communities. And so if we're talking about defeating poverty, that speaks right to that mission.
Sure. What is the greatest challenge of young people today in the areas that you serve?
I think it's primarily around finding sustainable employment around with a living wage that's going to allow people to pay for a home and live for a home. I think affordable housing is a huge issue. That's why we've seen so much population loss in Massachusetts, because people just can't afford to stay here. And I think mental health is a significant issue that is impacting and plaguing many young adults, whether it's how they survived the pandemic or the connection to social media, which studies have shown have had an impact on mental health. It's not about just getting rid of it, but let's help people regulate and understand how to deal with it and deal with their own emotions and mental health issues that come up.
Sure. So for folks here in Quincy that would like to access your services, how do they do that and how can you help them?
Sure. I think primarily people can go to our website. It's ulem.org. There you can find out more information about the programming and services that we offer. Sign up for or enroll in either our Entrepreneurship Accelerator Program or our Workforce Development Program, or find out more about our Youth STEM programs that run on Saturdays during the school year. And so those are some of the immediate programs that we can provide. We also have a domestic violence program that provides support and services for victims and survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault, but we also do culturally proficient training for first responders and clergy. And so I think those are some of the services that people could avail themselves of, and they can find out more information on our website, ulem.org.
Okay. How does your background as a criminal prosecutor play into your current role? What kind of skills does it bring to the table that you can help?
Yeah, I don't know that the skill of prosecution necessarily translates, but it's that experience that informed a lot of the advocacy that I've done over the years on criminal law reform and addressing harm within community that comes from people who are engaged in criminal activity. And I think that insight and perspective informs how I want to lead the organization to address some of these concerns. One of the things that I realized is that a lot of the disruption and crime in community stem from deep-rooted underlying issues that have not been addressed, whether it's the quality of education, the lack of quality housing, or exposure to trauma. The work of the Urban League is to address some of these underlying issues. And so if we can do that effectively, we see a subsequent reduction in crime, disruption, and subsequent prosecution and incarceration.
Yeah. You know, we had initially tried to have this interview during February for Black History Month,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Why would it have been important to highlight that during that month?
I think it's important to recognize the legacy and contributions of these long-term civil rights organizations like the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts. This is the work that we've been doing all along. And so recently, I know that there was kind of a racial awakening that happened in the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. But I think, and many organizations rose up in that moment, and there were a lot of corporations and philanthropies that made expressions of commitment to that work, and that's great, and we appreciate it. But also, it's important to recognize that there have been organizations within the Black community that have been doing this work for the long term and will continue to do this work in a way that is directly connected to the folks who are most directly impacted by some of those harms that people were reacting
to. Do you have a personal role model, Mr. Hall, that you look up to basically in relation to your mission now at ULEM?
Yeah, I mean, I think the work of Whitney M. Young was very impressive in how he led this organization. He was certainly subject to criticism for that. But I also think of people like Fannie Lou Hamer, who was an organizer in Mississippi and did a lot at great expense to herself and physical safety to raise the awareness about the disenfranchisement that was happening. And that certainly drives my perspective. And then I would be remiss if I were not to mention W.E.B. Du Bois, who talked about the role of race in society and the importance to understand how it operates, but also the importance of being intentional about addressing it and creating opportunities for people.
Well, thank you for bringing your message here to Quincy and using us here at QATV to inform the community. We appreciate that.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure.